You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
And not everything I'm going to talk about today is illegal. But everything that I'm going to talk about today is bad for regular Americans.
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
I'm a geek. I'm a nerd. I'm a data wonk.
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I talk about food a lot on the show. It's a thing. I am a foodie.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 5 p.m. Hope your workday has come to a close. Let's talk about some of the breaking news today. The House Ways and Means Committee, considering the Trump tax handouts for the ultra-wealthy while gutting Medicare, Medicaid, and food benefits, all those sorts of things that help working families. It can only be described as craven, with a hope that people aren't paying attention, or if they are paying attention, maybe paying attention to the wrong things. We've got some sound from the budget hearing. The first sound I want to share with you this afternoon is Lloyd Doggett of the Austin area. He's a Democrat from Texas, back and forth with a gentleman who is a nonpartisan. He is just a staffer to the Ways and Means Committee. This is explaining exactly what's going on here. They are taking away, you know, trying to reduce things like the insurance tax credit. If you had to get insurance on the ACA exchange, get rid of that tax credit. They're talking about getting rid of the state and local income tax credit. They're talking about getting rid of all the things that actually help working people, while at the same time giving trillion-dollar tax cuts to the wealthiest among us, resulting in a net increase, according to basically every available source out there, a net increase in the deficit of $5 trillion. Make it make sense. Let's take a listen. Here is Representative Lloyd Doggett.
Mr. Barthold, that this legislation fails to extend the enhanced tax credits that lower the cost of insurance for millions of Americans who purchase their own coverage through the marketplace?
That's correct.
And when the Republicans permit these credits to expire in a mere 7 months, what is the effect on health insurance premiums for those individuals that rely on the marketplace today?
Our staff has done in conjunction with the Congressional Budget Office suggests that the premiums will increase for individuals, sir.
Yes, sir. They'll go up about almost 8%, I believe, is the specific calculation that you did.
And is it you can true wrap that Jacob. So, again, there is instance after instance after instance of this happening in the House Ways and Means Committee. Folks, I'm going to spend a long time later this week, maybe a whole hour if I can, talking about what's called the distributional analysis by the Congressional Budget Office. The Congressional Budget Office, these are just a bunch of data nerds who sit around calculating the impact of different proposed legislation. The entire action, and I beg of you, if you are a MAGA supporter, if you are a Trump voter, if you are a swing voter, the action is in the distributional analysis of the tax cuts that Donald Trump is proposing to increase for the wealthiest among us. What is a distributional analysis? It looks at who benefits the greatest amount from tax cuts and who gets hurt the most. Here are the facts. This, according to the Yale Budget Lab, there's also an analysis from the CBO. I just pulled this right before we got on air today at 4 o'clock. Trump's tax cuts for trillionaires and billionaires, because Elon Musk is going to be a trillionaire in a couple of years. Here is what it does. The poorest 20% of us, their real income goes down by $1,100 because of these, quote, tax cuts. They are not tax cuts for the vast majority of us. They are actual income decreasers because they're cutting so many other things. For the top 1%, their incomes go up $43,000. The top 0.1%, it goes up $180,000. So I ask you, who's winning here? Who's losing? It's the distributional analysis. Please, I beg you, go take a look. Tax codes are expressions of our values. The value being expressed by Donald Trump and the MAGA party in Congress is screw you if you're a working person. And here's a handout if you're a 30 millionaire, if you're a 100 millionaire, if you're a billionaire or a soon-to-be trillionaire. And let's take a listen. This is Representative Souza, also today debunking a bunch of the broken promises of Donald Trump. Let's take a listen. This also from the House Ways and Means.
Okay, on tips. The president has said, your tips will be 100% yours. Does this tax bill continue the payroll tax on people's tips?
Yes, it does, Mr.
Overtime. The president said, your overtime will be tax-free. Does this bill continue the payroll tax on overtime?
It does not exempt overtime from the payroll tax.
The president has said he's going to remove taxes on Social Security. Does this bill remove taxes on Social Security benefits?
The legislation provides an increased exemption amount.
But does it remove taxes on Social Security benefits as promised by the president?
Does not change Social Security.
The president and the Republicans. Okay.
Tips, Social Security, overtime, all of the things that he promised you, which, by the way, if we had an actual progressive tax code, if we closed the carried interest loopholes, if we got rid of stock buybacks, if we actually taxed the rich their fair share, taxed the wealthiest corporations their fair share, if we actually had meaningful fair wage legislation in this country, we wouldn't need to worry about whether or not your Social Security was getting taxed. In fact, why should it be? If you're on a fixed income and you have less than $40,000, say even $50,000 or $60,000 of income, why should that be taxed at all? In fact, if you are an individual and you're making $40,000 a year or less, why should a penny of that be taxed? You're at the poverty level, the actual poverty level. Now, I've digressed. Want to get back to the breaking news of the day. There is so much of it. More to come on the House Ways and Means debacle that has been ongoing today. Donald Trump, of course, also taking a tour of the Mideast, not for foreign policy purposes, not to address starvation in Gaza, not to help broker a peace, not to confront Iran, not to address any of these issues. No. He's there with a litany of CEOs to engage in ever-increasing conflicts of interest and clear ethics violation that any normal person would think the president can't do that, except if it's Donald Trump, of course. It is a walking, talking, self-dealing, influence-peddling scheme, out and proud in the open. And oh, by the way, if you forgot, I just want to remind you this. 15 of the 19 9/11 attackers were from Saudi Arabia, ladies and gentlemen. 15 of the 19. Mohammed bin Salman, the leader of Saudi Arabia, he ordered the assassination of a journalist. But here's what Donald Trump has to say about that guy. Let's take cut 12, Jacob.
We look to, and we have great partners in the world, but we have none stronger and nobody like the gentleman that's right before me. He's your greatest representative, greatest representative. And if I didn't like him, I'd get out of here so fast. You know that, don't you? He knows me well. I do. I like him a lot. I like him too much. That's why we give so much. You know, too much. I like you too much.
The thing speaks for itself. Also today, Donald Trump announcing the lifting of all sanctions against Syria. Syria, the place where chemical weapons were used against their own people. Let's take a listen to that heretofore unheard of foreign policy announcement that Donald Trump, again, just announcing unilaterally. Would it surprise you to hear that there is a Trump Tower going up in Syria? Let's take a listen. Cut 14.
I will be ordering the cessation of sanctions against Syria in order to give them a chance at greatness.
Here's who is traveling around the Middle East, cutting business deals with the President of the United States. By the way, this is his first official trip as the U.S. president, the Pope funeral that didn't count for reasons I don't know, but this is his first official trip. Here's who's traveling the Middle East, again, cutting deals with an Elon Musk, Steven Schwarzman, CEO of Blackstone, Larry Fink, chief executive of BlackRock, Arvind Krishna, chairman and chief executive of IBM, Jane Fraser, chief executive of Citigroup, Kelly Ottberg, the chief executive of Boeing, Ruth Porat, the chief investment officer of Google, Andy Jassy, chief executive of Amazon, Sam Altman, chief executive of OpenAI, Jensen Huang, chief executive of NVIDIA, Alex Karp, chief executive of Planeteer, Jeff Miller, CEO of Halliburton, Travis Kalanick, CEO, former CEO of Uber and founder of Cloud Kitchens, Kathy Warden, CEO of Northrop Grumman, James Quincy, CEO of Coca-Cola, Dara Khosrowshahi, I'm sorry, the name is very complicated. The current CEO of Uber, Francis Suarez, the mayor of Miami, Reid Hoffman, the CEO and chairman of LinkedIn, Gianni Infantino, president of FIFA. You know, that totally incorruptible, above-board organization that has had no scandals about how they spend money or favor trading. And Patrick Soon-Shiong, executive chairman of Immunity Bio and owner of the Los Angeles Times, that, like the Washington Post, owned by Jeff Bezos, bent its knee to Donald Trump after his election, spiked endorsements and editorials that has been bleeding journalists ever since. All while the House Ways and Means Committee is considering giving trillions in tax cuts to the Americans that least need them, while gutting Medicare, Medicaid, veterans benefits, food support benefits, public education, etc., for the people that need it most. Budgets and tax codes are expressions of our value system as Americans. By any measure, this tax code will make income and wealth inequality worse than it already is. It will accelerate a government not of and by and for all Americans. It will accelerate and make worse a government that is only for the richest Americans. Unless your household has an income of over $500,000, I suggest to you, this president doesn't care one lick about you. When we return, a bit of a bright spot about some of the administration's efforts to remove climate data. I've got that for you and a bit more of breaking news next right here on The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back. Welcome. If you're just joining us, hope you are clocked out and getting home or arriving home to some beautiful weather, perhaps an iced tea or adult beverage on your back porch. I'm Maggie Dawn. Glad to have you with me this afternoon. We do have some really critical breaking news on the front, on the what I'm going to call, what data? That's not a thing if you can't show me data, but what data? There's no climate change because there's no data. Actual good news on this front. If you have been watching the deletions, and I know that that's a difficult thing to keep track of, you will know that the Trump administration has slowly been scrubbing climate data from all kinds of government websites. This, of course, highly ironic since the public actually owns that data. It is and should remain available via sunshine requests or open records requests, FOIA requests. And the fact that it's not available itself on these websites has been a problem and is being litigated on a number of fronts. News today is that the Trump administration has actually reversed itself on its purge of climate-related websites. This is in the Northeast Organic Farming Association of New York State versus the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The Trump administration writing to the judge in that case that restoration of that data and websites is, quote, already underway and is expected to be, quote, substantially complete in approximately 2 weeks. Who? Well, that is probably a good thing. That is on the USDA web pages. Now, why might they concede on the USDA? Perhaps because climate data is a little important to freaking farmers, ladies and gentlemen. Maybe that's why. Do you think they might consider restoring that data on other websites? I don't think they're going to do it absent a court order. Please continue to watch this space. Here is the other bit of absolutely stunning breaking news today. This and the ongoing saga of illegally, unconstitutionally, due process violating, disappearing of Kilmar Abrego Garcia. This is a case proceeding in the U.S. District Court in Maryland. This is the case that's being presided over by District Judge Paula Sinis. She entered an order today that has put us right on the line of a court finding the Trump administration in contempt. Just a couple hours ago, the court noted in an order filed on the docket that the defendant's filing is missing the privilege log that this court ordered to be produced. This is, quote, defendant's filing missing the privilege log that this court ordered to be produced. Defendants are ordered to correct this deficiency and file the privilege log by 3 p.m. today. That would have been on East Coast time. I've been watching the news. I have not seen any further reporting on what has happened there. This is right on the edge of contempt. This is Judge Innes writing further, quote, failure to file the privilege log or otherwise respond will be construed as an intentional refusal to comply with this court's orders. I'm sure the Trump administration will file something that's like, blah, 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 delay, can't do it, blah, blah, blah. Here's what all of this is about. The administration has claimed that the state secrets privilege prevents it from telling the judge anything about what they're doing or any discussion about how they're, quote, facilitating the return of this man, which the Supreme Court ordered. Apparently, again, I'm going to thank my senior producer, Jamie. We do have a just breaking update from minutes ago. The administration filed this privilege log after this order was issued under seal, which is not surprising, claiming that it to file it publicly would, quote, endanger ongoing diplomatic negotiations. Absolutely stunning developments here. And of course, We're still talking about the $500 million jet that Donald Trump is proposing to receive from Qatar. Let's take a listen to let's pick Rand Paul. I so rarely agree with him, but I did agree with Rand Paul yesterday on Fox News with Jesse Waters. Let's take a listen to that.
So should we be putting out our gimmies, Senator?
Well, it's a little bit different than a gimme putt. And the Constitution in Article 2 talks about the president can't take emoluments or gifts from foreign leaders. And so there is a provision in the Constitution that says you can't do this. And so the question is, can you do it if it's only for official purposes? If it came to someone in Congress, they can vote and the Ethics Committee can look at it. With his, there will have to be some kind of adjudication. This has never been done, and it's not like a ride on the plane. We're talking about the entire $400 million plane. I think it's not worth the appearance of impropriety, whether it's improper or not. I don't think it's worth it. The other problem with Qatar is, see, I've spent time trying not to sell weapons to Qatar because they have human rights violations of their people. Many of their people are prevented from participating in the government, and some of the minority religious folks in Qatar are treated poorly. And so I really haven't been a big fan, and I wonder if our ability to judge their human rights record would be clouded by the fact of this large gift. So I wouldn't take it. That's just me.
So,
I don't think it's a good idea.
If Qatar does give it to him, and he says,
so
hey,
I just want to explain this. Very basically, for us regular folks that aren't getting $500 million gifts from foreign companies, say someone that works for you, say someone that works with you, gave you $1 million, would you be more or less inclined to take actions favorable to that person in the future? Whether or not you intended to or not, that's why gifts are prohibited by the gosh darn Constitution. This one shouldn't be hard, ladies and gentlemen. Coming up, we got Dan Schaefer with the State Slate. You're not going to want to miss that. We turn inward here in Wisconsin. We come back here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. Network. If you've been listening to us for a while, you know that you can text in using the free Civic Media app. You can get that wherever you get your apps from. Just search for Civic Media. It'll pop up. Download that sucker. Not only can you can communicate with me and all of my fine guests and co-hosts, you will be ready to rock and roll for Free Ticket Friday. Every Friday throughout the summer, we're going to be giving away packages of four Brewers club-level tickets. I've sat in these seats. They are great. The Brewers might be having a little rough go of it, but you'll have nothing but a great time no matter what the score. So be sure you go ahead and get that app so that you are ready to go for this Friday's ticket giveaway. But right now, I have got a fabulous friend of the show, colleague in broadcasting, and multiple Milwaukee Press Club award winner. Congrats to my friend Dan on racking up a few more awards this past week. He is the creator of, author, contributor to, as well as our political editor. You may know him best from the Recombobulation area. It's a great Substack. I subscribe and read everything Dan's got out there. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show, Dan, and congrats on your well-deserved recognition from the Milwaukee Press Club.
Thank you so much, Maggie. What an introduction. I really appreciate it. How about that? That's good stuff right there. Yeah, we had a good night on Friday. Some real exciting wins for us. So it was a good night for the Recombobulation area. Good night for Civic Media.
Yes, and congrats also to my guest co-host earlier today, Angela Lang, as well as my colleague Earl Ingram here at Civic Media. Good night. Well-deserved kudos for each and every one of you. Dan, there was over the weekend an incredible tragedy here in the city of Milwaukee. We had an apartment fire that took the lives of five people. I did not realize this, but unlike many states and other jurisdictions, We have very lax sprinkler laws here in the state of Wisconsin. Tell us a little bit more of the context, and maybe we'll warm up to a little bit of sound that I found, frankly, jaw-dropping in a time where very little shocks me anymore.
Yeah, a terrible tragedy over the weekend in Milwaukee. A four-story, 85-unit building went up in flames on the near west side in the city of Milwaukee, the Highland Court Apartments on the corner of 27th and Highland Avenue. And, you know, five people died from the tragedy. And it sounds like the apartment fire is going to make the entire unit unlivable. So lots of people displaced by this as well. People are asking a lot of questions. One of those questions that people are asking is why this building is not required to have sprinklers for fire safety in them. It turns out the building was built in 1968, was not required to have that at the time, and buildings constructed before 1974 were not required to have sprinklers, according to some comments over the weekend from Milwaukee Fire Chief Aaron Lipsky. So he said, you know, this is a grandfather clause and nobody was required to go back and make the building fire safe. And it sounds like from Lipsky's comments over the weekend to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, you know, he said, quote, "It would be an expensive proposition, but I have four fatalities here today. I'm not sure what people think is more expensive right now."
That from City of Milwaukee Police Chief Aaron Lipsky. He's putting his finger right on it, right? It's... Well, how much value do we assign to human life, and why shouldn't we be requiring older buildings to retrofit sprinkler systems? My grandma lived in a large multi-story building in the city of Milwaukee, and this happened to her back in the early 80s. Her picture was actually on the cover of the Milwaukee Sentinel before it combined into the Journal Sentinel, being rescued out of her upper floor apartment. She was in her early 70s at the time. And I remember having this same discussion then, right? Like, why didn't the building have sprinklers? And I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, other people lost their life back in that fire. These are avoidable tragedies. Here's what I find to be an even greater tragedy. Let's take a listen, Jacob, to what Assembly Speaker Robin Voss had to say on this loss of life.
The last thing that we want to do is to make it even more expensive to own a home or to rent an apartment. So I think, look, we have a great track record in Wisconsin. I think that we want to ensure that, of course, people are safe, but we have to be careful about overreacting to a single or unfortunate incidents like this, which occur, but less and less likely over time. When we have such a huge cost problem, the number one thing that I hear about when we talk about housing is, I can't believe how much it is for a 1, 2, or 3-bedroom apartment in most of Wisconsin. Obviously, if you add on additional costs, landlords aren't going to eat that. That would be passed along in higher rents. So I think we really have to think about that and what the potential ramifications are before we just pass a mandate that might feel good for the moment, but make people homeless, drive up costs, and certainly not have the intended effect.
Before I literally start screaming into the void, and I'd like to get your reactions to the speaker's comments.
I mean, it's such a contrast from the comments from the Milwaukee fire chief, who was talking about, you know, how the fatalities was his priority and dealing with that. And I think part of the context that we have to examine here is that Robin Voss is himself a landlord. And in his time as Assembly Speaker, has passed several laws benefiting landlords. You know, in 2019, the Journal Sentinel ran an investigative series on this and calling it the Landlord's Legislature. They've done things like eliminate tenant legal defenses, limit the power of cities to police landlords, allow landlords to toss renters' belongings to the curb, cap fees tied to building code violations. There's so many different things that they passed in the Landlord's Legislature that I think you have to wonder if there should be some accountability here.
So I wanted to approach this first as an economist, and though I find it pretty distasteful, trying to take the speaker's comments just at face value. Yes, requiring retrofitting all buildings, especially these large multi-unit apartment complexes, to retrofit for sprinkler systems is expensive. That shouldn't be the end of the discussion. And it's not the lack or presence of sprinklers that is making housing unaffordable and unattainable for most. To conflate those two issues together and say, we can't make sure that everyone is safe, and let's be clear about the people that live in buildings that were built before 1974. Most folks that I know that are living in buildings, especially multi-unit apartment buildings that were built before 1974, do not have household annual incomes of $150,000 or $100,000 or even $50,000 or more, right? It tends to be people on the lower end of the income scale. So translating what Speaker Voss just said is, because it is expensive for multi-unit apartment landlords like myself to make sure that all people are safe in their homes, it's okay if some poor people die. That's what Speaker Voss just said. Now, we can do an actual good faith analysis of what it would cost to retrofit sprinklers, what it might do to rents, how to avoid making rent even more unaffordable, excuse me. We could have a good faith discussion about that. We could talk about whether or not there might be some, you know, dollars in the state budget to help defray those costs for landlords. But the idea that in such a dismissive way of human, to be that dismissive of human life, which is, it's the Pinto calculation. Well, should we recall the patently unsafe vehicle? Well, how many people do we expect to die? Are we going to get sued? Well, probably. Is the total dollar value of the lawsuits going to be less than what it would call us to recall the inherently dangerous product? Well, then, if it's more expensive to recall the product, we'll simply let the people die because that's economically cheaper. I think we need to ask ourselves, is that really the value that we want being expressed by elected leaders? Instead of saying, this is a tragedy, we need to assess how to make an apartment building safe for everyone, no matter what their income level is, what is an acceptable level of risk. This can't be it. The failure to have sprinklers cannot be okay. And then look at how to make sure that housing is actually affordable. It's not sprinklers that are the make and break problem here, right? There has been a decrease in federal funding in affordable housing, a decrease in state funding for affordable housing over the last 50 years. That's what's going on here, as housing has gotten way more expensive. So that is a statement, in my opinion, that is so callous, and it is frankly in bad faith, because the conflation of those two questions together is not a good faith argument from someone.
And, you know, look, I drive past that building pretty regularly.
Yes.
In Milwaukee. You know, There's a lot of police and public safety people still outside of that building, and people are still trying to figure out where they're going to live and so many different things. And it's just an awful, the comments from Robin Voss today is just an awful way for a powerful elected official to be talking about people who experienced a traumatic, deadly tragedy. Like, we're still, you know, this happened like, you know, less than 3 days ago.
Yeah, it's sad. Our friend Mark from Sussex saying, Voss didn't say that. He said, if you put in sprinklers, they can't afford to live there. Mark from Sussex and my other conservative friends, to say that we can't make things safe for people and just assume it's going to make things too expensive for them doesn't get at the root causes of unaffordable housing, and says, if you are low income, then you don't deserve to survive a fire, because all you can afford is an unsafe and inherently unsafe building. The Milwaukee fire chief, as my producer Jacob is pointing out, said, what is the value of a life? Robin Voss's answer as a Republican is less than an apartment building. That's what the answer is. I just, this is not something that I think is worthy of sort of a gloss over and an overarching sort of, well, this is fine because it's pro-business. It's also just pro-Robin Voss. He probably, does anybody know, does Robin Voss own a building that doesn't have sprinklers? This inquiring mind would like to know. Let's take a couple of calls on this. We got some action here, Dan. Phil from Minneapolis, what do you got for us? Say hello to Dan.
Hi, Dan. Well, I can speak from personal experience, having been in a four-alarm special fire shortly before I got married many decades ago, that not having smoke alarms might be part of the problem. And I looked up Milwaukee City Code only requires landlords to put smoke alarms in public rooms and requires the tenants to put and keep in good condition smoke alarms in sleeping rooms. Now,
yeah, Phil's got a point. Do we get rid of seatbelts because it makes cars more expensive? Do we get rid of smoke alarms because it makes apartments more expensive? Why do we have public safety at all? It drives up our taxes and tamps down business. Let's get rid of the clean air and clean water provisions. It makes business more expensive. Pshaw. Thanks so much, Dan. We're out of time. Keep it.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Might be caught in the crossfire. Pardon the terrible pun. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My colleague in broadcasting, creator of the Recombobulation Area, political editor Dan Schaefer, sticking around because we've struck a nerve. We listened to what Assembly Speaker Robin Voss had to say about the costs of mandating sprinklers in all, let's just say, apartment buildings in the state of Wisconsin, suggesting that doing so would make housing unaffordable. We've been debating that point. We've gotten some input on the text line, Mark from Sussex, saying that my characterization of what Assembly Speaker Voss said is itself a lie, that by saying or characterizing what he said as, I don't know, uncaring about human life when it is the lives of people that don't have a lot of money who might be forced to live in an apartment building built before 1974, that it's callous, that that's a lie. And I think one of the things that it's important to point out here is there are ways to solve these problems when there are costs, like a huge cost to install sprinkler systems. We need to ask ourselves a fundamental question. Is it okay for people, no matter what their income level, to live in a building without sprinkler systems? It results in people dying. Dan, thanks for sticking around. First of all, your thoughts, my friend.
Yeah, I think it also, you know, you talk about like the response to this tragedy too. And our reporter at Civic Media here, Stuart J. Waddles, in his piece on this news, noted that more than 30 fire trucks responded as crews left. Like, what's the cost of that? You know, if we're talking about like the cost of reinstalling some sort of sprinkler system or providing some sort of basic safety measures for people who live in apartment buildings and requiring landlords to actually take action, like, what's the cost of doing, you know, if he's going to make that particular argument, which, again, on its face, ridiculous thing to say, uncaring thing to say, unsympathetic thing to say, especially just days after this tragic fire in the city. But what are the what's the cost of bringing fire trucks from all over the county to deal with this? What's the cost, ongoing cost throughout this as well? Like, I think, you know, again, going back to the comments that Fire Chief Aaron
Lipsky made
it in the immediate wake of it. He said, of course, it would be an expensive proposition, but I have four fatalities here today. I'm not sure what people think is more expensive right now.
Well, and you actually put your finger, Dan, on something that is really critical that often gets left out of this business, the narrow way in which we define business cost. And I'm going to put it to everybody this way. Certain lines of business will create what economists call negative externalities. These are costs that are not innately internalized to the product or that are able to be externalized because of the nature of the business. When there are negative externalities for a particular line of business, those impacts, those externalities do get paid for. They just get paid for by taxpayers. In other words, taxpayers, via the very things that you're talking about, Dan, the fire truck response, the cost of providing emergency services to people, of relocating, and the cost of the loss of these lives in their families, we end up paying that, which is in effect a subsidy for those particular apartment owners to continue to own multi-unit apartments without sprinkler systems. So you can actually do analyses to help make those external costs internal and to make that all very transparent and plain and ask people, do we wish to put tax dollars towards sprinkler systems or to require landlords to do this and look at other housing supports, right? There are ways to do this analysis. And again, the thing that strikes me as so offensive about what Speaker Voss said is that, like many things I hear from the GOP, it has this veneer of plausibility. It is at base callous. It sounds pro-business, but what it results in is greater burden on every regular day, everyday taxpayers, and a callousness that's directed at the folks that have the least in our communities. That's fundamentally my objection to it. Those costs are getting paid. This apartment fire is an example of that. The costs are just being foisted on the taxpayers that have to create systems to absorb those incredible loss of life and the devastation of this disaster. You can make that argument about climate change as well. We have effectively subsidized big oil by requiring them not to make cleaner burning energy or invest in alternative energies. It is a problem. Dan, any final closing thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think we also have to remember that Voss is himself a landlord and has passed several laws benefiting landlords. And here he is talking about a situation where perhaps some scrutiny could be brought to this particular landlord or landlords more broadly. And he is finding ways around to bring any level of accountability there. Like, I think this is a part of Robin Voss's tenure as Assembly Speaker that warrants more, that has warranted more scrutiny. And here he is bringing it back into the spotlight.
You want to put it in GOP terms, as my producer Jacob points out. Hey, Robin, you want to demand that landlords install sprinkler systems? Give them a tax write-off. It's what you usually do. There are ways to solve these problems. We're going to always continue to talk about those ways here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Thanks, everybody, for listening. My thanks to Dan Schaefer, our political editor, creator of the Recombobulation Area. Thanks to Jamie and Jacob. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.